Welcome. This is the UX Design Cast podcast series, and my name is Carl Vredenberg. This is episode number 24, and this is a design review format of the session, and we'll be talking today about the IBM Lotus iNotes Ultralight for the iPhone. And I'm delighted to have with me today three members of the team that designed and developed that product, starting with Margot Ezekiel, who is user experience professional on the project. Welcome, Margot.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for being on. And second, we have Carrie Tracy, who is the senior visual designer on the project. Welcome, Carrie.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
And finally, we have Michelle Cooper, who is the user or the usability specialist rather on the project. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, this is a really exciting project. I've been really looking forward to talking about this one because I've also used it and I'm thrilled by it. And I wanted to start off and get at sort of the 50,000 foot level on what we're really talking about here first. So many people will have heard about IBM Lotus Notes as the product. And we did talk about it in a previous podcast just a couple of podcasts ago. And there are also some, 140 million people that actually use it. So you may actually be aware, if you're listening to this podcast, what IBM Lotus Notes is, but you may not know. And so I want to just ask the team to describe a little about what Lotus Notes is, and in particular also what this iNotes is, and also the iNotes Ultralight for iPhone. So maybe Margot, if you could just give us a 50,000 foot level description of what all this is about.
Sure, Carl, happy to. So Lotus Notes is a collaboration environment. It's got two parts. There's a server part and a rich client part. The server part is called Domino, and then there's a rich client called Notes. And from Notes, you can do your email, calendar, contacts, to-dos, and various other things. But beyond that, there's a application development environment where IT departments can build custom applications, and it can become a very rich environment where you can have customized applications for your business purposes. So it's integrated with these applications and email, and we have an instant messaging client that's also integrated, and a lot of other tools. And it's sort of the flagship of our integration suite, our collaboration suite. And it's been in development for a long time. I've worked on it for many, many years, back in the 90s. And our main competitor, I guess, is Outlook Exchange. And we have a very modern interface now to it with using Eclipse. And then we also have a web access part, which is what iNotes is. It was formerly called Domino Web Access, or DWA, but you can run it from a browser. So users can either get to Notes from a rich client, or they can get it from a browser experience, which works well for a lot of shops that just want their users to go in through the browser, or for shop floors where they may not have, where they may have laptops or kiosks. So the Domino Web Access product, now called iNotes, has a couple of different flavors depending on people's computers and their processing powers. There's a fold mode that is very rich, and you actually don't even feel like you're in a browser. It feels more like a rich application. And then there's a lighter version when you have less processing power. But they didn't have a version that was really accessible. So they built this ultralight version, and it's faster, it's accessible, it's just very lightweight. And this is a version that works both on the desktop, on the Firefox browser, and also on the iPhone. It's a lot of eyes, IBM iNotes iPhone. But it works on the iPhone, and it came out about a year ago on the 8.02 server. And it's been a neat little product. It's a foray into the mobile environment, which, because we know, you know, the world is going mobile.
A great overview. So people that are used to Lotus Notes in on the client, I would still suggest and suspect that most people probably are aware of it in that form. What's real exciting here is there's also the browser version, as you say, that's available. And even more exciting to a lot of people that use things like iPhones and iPod touches as well have now this capability, which we'll be talking about today, of the Lotus Notes iNotes Ultralight for the iPhone. Quite a mouthful, but a long product name for a very small footprint product. So let's go through a little bit of what each of your roles were on the team. Maybe if we can start again with Margot, just giving an overview of what your role was on this particular project.
Sure. So I was the UX designer on the project, and I worked probably very closely with the development team to streamline the feature set that we were going to put in. You know, the Notes client product is a huge product. It's very, very rich. The iNotes product is a little less rich and only doesn't do any of the application work. So for the Ultralight product, we really had to narrow it down to see what features we could put in on a release schedule to get the proof of concept going and then to start building it up to be a really useful product. So I worked very closely with the development team and also with Carrie and Michelle to work on the design and the feature set going forward. And we continue to work on each iteration as we understand the business requirements. So my role was to sort of work with development on the feature set and then the beginning of the features, and as I fleshed out the features, to bring in Carrie and Michelle to help make them usable and working and, you know, make them feel native to the platform that we were working on. So I'll pass it over to Carrie and then Michelle.
Sure. I'm the visual designer on the team, and Margot acts sort of as the liaison between the development side, the visual side, and then also the user research side. So after she's gathered her business requirements and feature sets, and then compiled a set of wireframes, some very loose sketches that kind of put things in order, puts hierarchy on the features. And then I go over and I kind of figure out how to put like a compelling user graphical interface to that. So I'll work with things like color and topography and gradients just to give it that compelling, rich feel that you get in the Notes environment on the desktop. So I kind of wanted to carry that same look and feel over so that there would be some familiarity between the rich client experience on the desktop and then also carry that onto the iPhone.
Plus, you had done a lot of the work to bring the Notes onto the Mac, so you were very familiar.
Yes,
And you work on a Mac, you're very familiar with all the Apple guidelines. And one good example of how this worked was when we first did the homepage, the engineers did this really ugly list of everything, just sort of as a linear list, a little table, and it was pretty geeky. But it had the feature set we needed, and we turned it over to Carrie, and we got back this, you know, beautiful little chiclet page we now have on our homepage that none of us were thinking that way. And that's sort of how it got transformed. I'll pass over to Michelle.
Hi. So as the usability specialist, I was involved throughout the all of these processes from the wireframing stage and all the way through to the end design stage and getting feedback constantly from users and how they felt the features were working, if things worked as expected, if they needed or expected other functionality that we didn't have yet. And even though that may not have been in the plan, it still helped prioritize future lists, and getting continuous feedback from them helps us continue to prioritize and refine the product to the best it can be.
And you also brought a lot of your own, you know, input and judgment. Like, I remember pinging you saying, what do you think about this term or that term? And, you know, just, you know, we all helped sort of craft the design as we went along in terms of, how does this look laid out? You know, does it seem like it's going to be usable? Are we using the right terms? We also have a writer that we worked with that helped us on really finessing the interface to be as minimal and as clear as possible textually. So we did sort of work collaboratively, you know, as we developed the designs to make sure all three of us got our expertise in and assured that we thought it was going to be the most usable features that we could come up with.
So to follow up on each of your sort of introductions there, I was thinking about, Margot, that, you know, we've got this really feature-rich product that you talked about that you're now converting over into this little tiny space, and you need to take that feature list and get it into a reasonable form. And it's clearly often, when we talk about simplicity and design, not desirable to keep all functions in a product. You make them really usable and consumable, often by reducing the feature set down to a logical set that ends up being, you know, the critical features, and that they're designed in a way that you can then use effectively. How did you go about, you know, identifying what would be the, you know, core features that should be in the product? And did you have a notion of who you were designing this for, the kind of person that would be most likely to use, you know, the product?
Great question, Carl. It actually was hard because with 140 million users, you always have a big set that, you know, has to have this feature or else they're not going to use it. And I remember we had this discussion that we were going to have, you know, obviously Reply and Forward, and then somebody said we have got to have Reply All. You know, it's just not even a question. It's not a question. We have to have that. And sort of the team would sit around, and it was at that level of, you know, do we really need Reply All? Okay, can we just do a reply with history, or do we need a checkbox? And really going through it at that level and saying, no, we can cut here, we can cut there. But as we designed, we really did have a persona in mind, and our persona is an executive, because we, at this stage of the availability and sort of popularity of iPhones, or were we designing a year ago at least, you know, they weren't everybody's pocket at that point, but the executives were the ones who were getting them and using them and pushing the decision tree as to get the product into their offices. And it doesn't always work that way, but with this product, it was definitely the executive. And we were really focused on mail triage. And we still hear this, that people really want to take this device to be able to keep up with their mail and see what's happening. They don't necessarily want to compose email, and they want to see what's on their calendar, but they don't necessarily need to create appointments. Those are secondary features. What they really need to do is be able to, you know, not miss anything, mm-hmm. and have it there really quickly, to be able to read it and maybe, you know, set some quick replies. But also knowing the nature of the phone and that it's not so easy to type on, and that that's not one of its great usability features at this point. You know, we made some decisions based on that too and tried to skew our feature set toward, you know, this mail triage situation that an executive would need to do, or, you know, someone busy. And that, now, we definitely used a persona. We had developed personas for the Notes client, and so we were able to use, it's not Felipe, it's Ted Amato is our persona, and he has a secretary, Betty, but we mostly focused on Ted, and that really did help.
There's also then, I guess, decisions. And I guess using the same one that the Notes client, you know, uses, at least one of the ones that they do, it also provides a level of, you know, consistency across the platforms. And I wanted to follow that up with Carrie. You know, when you talk about something like the iPhone, lots of products these days require, you know, phenomenal visual design, engagement. You know, there are a lot of visual style, kind of even fashion aspects to design. It must be a great time to be a visual designer, I would think, and also designing for something like this platform, this iPhone platform. You mentioned earlier, you know, the objective for designing here for the platform and making sure that you're aligned with it, that our products look and feel and fit in with the overall experience on the device itself, but also to be consistent with the overall family, you know, visual signature and the like as well. I wonder if you could just talk about how you achieved, you know, that, because I think you have achieved it, because I've used the product with regard to both of those objectives. I wonder if you could just describe a little about how you went about doing that.
Yeah, sure. I definitely wanted to keep the integrity of the iPhone platform. I think this project was really new for the three of us, and, you know, we were just kind of coming up to speed with how the iPhone worked and, you know, really learning about the device in and of itself. And I think it kind of brought a fresh perspective to it because it was something new. You know, we were breaking away from our desktop experience, so we were kind of able to look at it in a fresh way. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we had gone through the past few years redesigning Lotus Notes and same time as we know it and giving it this really new, fresh, compelling look and feel. So like the Ted Amato, the executive persona that we were reaching for. I really wanted Ted to be able to work on the desktop experience, and then if he was running to another meeting, be able to transition to the iPhone experience pretty seamlessly, but then use those visual cues and those features from the desktop but make them really usable for the iPhone as well. Mm-hmm. So we use similar visual languages like icons and colors, and then altered them where it made sense for the iPhone environment, you know, like things like alerts. We tried to use the same type of visual language that they have there. They put like a little tag when you've got a new email. And those are like fun little details that really make it feel like it's a part of the iPhone. And so, yeah, we really wanted to create this compelling, visually rich environment that iPhone has. And mm-hmm. it's very tactile. So I just love that quality. And I found it really inspiring to kind of break free from the desktop mold and allow ourselves to be a little bit creative in that environment.
But we also, we're very strict about following the Apple guidelines, because not all products on the iPhone are following them as strictly. Right. But we were pretty strict because we really felt like we had to be, you know, everything had to be 44 pixels high so it would be touchable by a finger. And we used all the affordances that the guidelines said of using the, you know, arrows and stuff. Right. So it was a combination of, you also had to work within those constraints of those guidelines.
Right.
Which were sometimes not so clear.
Yeah. Well, and that they're also challenging too. I mean, just like the desktop experience, I mean, you've got operating system challenges that and confinements and constraints that you're working within. But I think that's kind of what makes our job fun in a way, is that really trying to find the best solution for the constraints you're working within.
And knowing whether you've got the right solution or not within the constraints and all that would also, I think, very importantly come down to actually evaluating the effectiveness of those designs on a regular basis with users, which is also what Michelle really did. When I think about the kinds of platforms we normally do user testing with, you know, you have the computer, you have a variety of ways of directly capturing what's going on the computer. You can see what they're doing because it's a big enough space. It's kind of an interesting thought here of how you actually do user study type work with a tiny little device like this. I mean, how did you go about doing that, Michelle?
Right. So this was a bigger challenge than normal. We weren't new to the idea of testing mobile devices, but most mobile devices still worked similar enough to a desktop experience, or it could be projected to a desktop and be seen by a larger audience. And in this case, with it being so new, we had a lot of challenges where we were strictly confined to the phone. So in most cases, it was just me hovering over the poor user, trying to see as much as I could and ask as many questions as I could about what they were experiencing and how they felt doing it.
We tried that little camera on it. We tried one of those handheld mobile cameras to try and capture it, and it was just impossible with the glare and the angle.
Yeah, and that also meant we couldn't record. Typically, we record with Camtasia to go back and review, and that was not an option for us in this case.
That's a business opportunity.
It is. It was also hard the first time we did testing that we didn't have many people that actually had iPhones that owned them. So some people were, you know, experiencing, you know, oh, this is so funky, and it was just using the iPhone that was a hurdle. So we couldn't separate that from, you know.
Yeah, teaching them the new touch and scroll and
Right. We knew that wasn't our product problem, but we couldn't separate it. We couldn't get enough users. Now it's not a problem.
Right. Yes. We have
users knocking
on
our door.
Great user base, of this. And we also now, because of the wider acceptance, we have people using it in the beta and having their own experiences to share with us and not just me hovering over them in the lab. We did try to do some testing on the desktop using our interface, and it just clearly, you know, as you might think obvious, there were just affordances that the phone has that made it unrealistic enough, I guess, that it really wasn't as helpful.
You really got to touch it, right, Michelle?
Yeah.
But you did do a few paper tests on things that when we were trying to figure things out, you would print out things and just bring them around the hall.
Yeah. And in cases like that with terminology and things like that, that was very good to still do.
It's interesting to actually have done this and started the design work, as you say, right around the time that, you know, the product itself, the iPhone, was sort of coming out. and that you've got people that really don't know how to use it all that well. And there's actually a lot, in my experience, I've blogged a bunch about this. There are a ton of very neat features, but you know, they're very hard to find. So I would imagine that your experience in going through during the course of your design and development work of this project, people's own experience with iPhone interfaces would have, you know, dramatically changed and might actually over time, you know, change design too as people get more and more familiar with these kinds of UIs. Now, I wanted to ask a little about, you know, what would go on in a typical week? I mean, you've each described your role, the kind of work that you, how you started with the persona and starting off with the style guides and stuff like that. What would a typical cycle of work be of starting with a, you know, now we're going to be working, I know you did an agile kind of approach here. I wonder if you could just describe how you, the three of you worked and how you worked with the rest of the development team.
Very closely.
I think one of the great advantages we had on this team was we were co-located. We're all here in Westford, and the development team is mostly here in Westford. There is a China team doing QE, and they had scrums. I think maybe twice a week we had scrums when it was active, and the scrums tended to be a little longer than, I think they were about a half an hour.
Do you want to explain what a scrum is?
Oh, a scrum, it's such a lovely term. A scrum is an agile term where you're supposed to meet, I think, ideally 15 minutes every day, but that never seems to happen here. We usually meet half an hour twice a week, and everyone's supposed to go around and say what they're doing, if they have any issues that are holding them up, and what they're going to be doing. And it's supposed to be a quick status and a quick turnaround to keep the project going. And, you know, I usually was attended those, but you guys came, you know, at various points, I guess, when it was appropriate. And things were pretty fluid. You know, I use Same Time a lot to communicate. We use the notes databases. We had the specs one database, and Carrie has a visual design request that I could put, you know, saying we need a new icon, and she would communicate the assets, and she had her own visual specs. So there was a lot going on. There were three main UI developers, and, you know, there were often times when we were in their offices saying, no, move it over pixel, and a lot of just really interactive iterative design going on. It's a very fluid group. We worked together, I guess, solidly for about a year, and I have to say it was the most functional team I think I've ever worked on.
Really great group dynamics, too. I think we just our personalities also just really melded really well with each other. And, you know, I think when you've got a group that has a really great attitude and has that great working environment, you're able to get things done a lot quicker and faster. I mean, one thing that people don't realize is that we're on four other different projects. You know, I'm the lead visual designer for Same Time. So this was kind of a after school project for me. So we did need to be really efficient in the way that we communicated and met with the team. And I think we ended up getting a lot done when we sat down in the same room together working things out.
And this team is really, they've been well conditioned. They appreciate UI, and they know that they need it to be cool for it to succeed, and they're very well conditioned to say, I don't know if this is any good. Can you guys tell me what to do? And they don't proceed without our blessing, which is really a luxury. And they've just, you know, they appreciate it. They know the success of this product will be on how easy it is to use and how it looks. And they know it's a cool project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they can appreciate all the design effort that we've put in. So it was a very cooperative environment. It was never an us against them, you know, environment, which made it really a pleasure.
Yeah, I'd reiterate that they were very open and forthcoming to feedback and really looking forward to any kind of feedback they could get constantly from any users, from me, from I always felt well received and open minds.
Yeah, I mean, they got a little tired of when at the very beginning when we iterated quite a few times and said this isn't right and we had to keep on changing on them. But I think once they got used to that, they weren't going to get a final UI design from us initially.
That's true though, because that was really an important aspect too. Because like you would have an idea of how something would work, but until you actually saw it and touched it and moved it, it kind of then became clear that this is not working at all. So we did have that kind of moving and reiterating on things.
And they built it into their design, you know, into their schedules. Their schedules, I have to say the team lead was very supportive and really understands design process and had really built it into the schedule.
And trusted us.
And trusted us. And so we didn't pack it so jam-packed, the schedule, that there has been time to iterate and change things. And, yeah, they've been very eager. on any feedback we can get them.
So when you were just describing that, and Carrie, you were saying what was really key to this was, you know, really getting it beyond sort of the concept. So if Margot's going to the scrum and you get, you know, the items that are going to be worked on, let's say, in the next cycle, what logistically would happen then? Do you wireframe it up, you know, Margot? Does, you know, Carrie pick it up then and do the, you know, fleshing out the rest of the design for that particular feature? And then, you know, Michelle gets, you know, feedback on it. Give us an idea of how you actually would work together in terms of logistically passing different types of work, you know, to each other.
Yeah, I would generally get, you know, wireframes from Margot, and she would kind of take her first pass at it. And then, like any great relationship, there's a back and forth, give and take, and a collaborative, almost like brainstorming environment of where she would say, you know, I'm really trying to create more focus on this area, and do you think it would be best used as a button or an icon or a link, and, you know, maybe can we move it here and there? And so there would definitely be a lot of moving and changing things around. And then I would go and put kind of like a visual skin on it. And, you know, sometimes things don't become clear until the visual skin is really on it, and then you kind of think, that's not working. It needs to change and needs to go there.
Yeah,
so Margot would take it again, and then there would be this back.
And then we had a huge sort of upheaval when we found out, when they translated it to all the different languages on this form factor. We don't know how other companies are doing it, but we just ran into such problems when we translated, I think, to Dutch and German, and we had to redesign the whole framework because things weren't fitting, and we had to make things bigger and move things around, and it really became a huge problem with wrapping and alignment. We had everything really nicely, you know, right aligned like you're supposed to, and in columns, and all got blown into pieces when we went to all the different languages. It was a huge design challenge that we had to really work out a lot of technical details and the visual design and a balance.
Right, and I feel it's important to say that it wasn't always like a handing of the torch type of process. There weren't always clear lines of who's doing what. You know, this is only your job. We always worked so collaboratively that, you know, Margot always made me feel like I was, you know, as equal the designer as I was giving, you know, just user feedback in a lot of cases. And I don't always feel like, you know, I only had my own place. I feel like our relationship was so
fluid,
smooth across the three of us that we were just always working together and not just always waiting for the, you know, one person's process to be done before
right.
we could.
And as Carrie said, we were all on different projects and all different priorities. I mean, I was juggling, I think, four different initiatives, and I don't have any, you're supporting a lot of different products too. So we were, it was all sort of catch as catch can. Do you have time to work on this right now?
And if not, we're going to lock you in the door and you can. And sometimes we did. There were like full days where we would have sessions.
Carrie and I had sessions at Panera.
Yeah. Over a very large chocolate croissant and coffee.
Oh, well, that sounds good. No, it also sounds like you're achieving really the promise of a lot of the attributes of agile development that people talk about, that, you know, non-agile development typically is very hierarchical, very much siloed in terms of each discipline doing its own thing and handing it off. And I think as you were pointing out, Michelle, and all three of you have talked about, you know, the degree to which you're each working and gelling as a team, contributing each of your individual, you know, disciplines and skills and the like, but really working collaboratively very seamlessly to be able to create this overall, you know, solution. So I think as I listen to you describe this, it really is sort of a realization, I think, of the promise of very good, you know, agile development as well, and working obviously with the rest of the development team as well. Now, you've talked a little bit about some of the challenges. So Margot, you talked about the notion of the challenge of getting into translation and dealing with translation expansion, especially within this form factor, and having to do some redesign to address that. Can you talk about any other challenges that you had that you needed to overcome on this, you know, very interesting project?
Well, another challenge we had was because this was supposed to be an accessible version of iNotes, and that was one of its other purposes, we couldn't use JavaScript. And that really, it meant that, you know, when we had a drop-down menu, we had to add a go button. And there were lots of other things that we had to do that made the interface clunkier and not as sophisticated as we would have liked because we were working within that constraint. you know, another year has passed and they've made the decision now that if you're on the iPhone, you pretty much will have JavaScript, so we can have a slightly different interface for the iPhone than we can for the desktop application, which will continue to remain accessible. And they also did one for the development effort into having to maintain two different interfaces, but they're able to now. So that was a big constraint that we were constantly bumping up against. And again, because we are a browser application and not a native application, we didn't have access to a lot of the cool things that they have on the iPhone. And so, you know, they constantly said in the address book, why can't you have the A to Z on the right-hand side? And it's like, well, because we're not a native app, we don't have access to the, you know, that. And there were lots of things like that. People wanted to be able to get to their own contacts on the phone, and we weren't able to mesh with that. So that was a lot of frustration to make it look and feel as much like a native app so that, you know, people felt compelled to use it. It was the iPhone. It was cool. And make it as usable as we could given those constraints. And I think as the product has been growing and we've been adding more features to make it richer and more usable, it's really a challenge to work in this form factor, especially staying within the Apple guidelines of saying everything has to be 44 pixels. And, you know, it's just harder and harder to get a rich feature set in. And you'll notice that when things run as a web application, they don't look like a native app. They don't pay attention to the 44 pixels. And they just, you know, have links everywhere and multiple things in a line. And your fingers, you know, you have to often expand it to get to something that you can click. So it's that has been, continues to be a really large challenge.
Yeah, I do want to say, though, just kudos, because from the customer's point of view, everyone has done such a great job by making it feel like a native app that they forget that they are on a web page and they have these expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we really have made it feel like, you know, this is where it belongs, and they don't realize that they're, you know, it's still just a web page.
Yeah, that's actually my own experience as well, Michelle, in working, you know, with it, that, you know, initially, when I'd heard the description of it being a, you know, the web page coming through Safari, I deal with a lot of websites through Safari. And as Margot says, you know, there's a lot of stuff there that you can't touch very easily with your, I mean, on other websites, you know, using your finger. But everything within your product here truly does feel, as Michelle says, like a native app. It has the advantages of being in the browser, but also has the advantages of a number of the capabilities that are in, you know, native apps. And you truly do get the feeling, I think, as Michelle says, that this is native. So I think you've probably, you know, done the trade-offs and ended up with a really nice outcome of really having the best of both worlds in this environment. Now, I wanted to ask you, too, about, you know, you've all worked on this. You put your heart and soul into this. I know you're on a number of other projects as well, but this one, I would imagine, would be a real favorite because it's such a neat, you know, product and such a neat platform to be designing for as well. What do each of you think about in terms of what you're most proud of what, you know, you've put into this product, you know, what you've achieved with it, and maybe even just maybe talk a little about what kinds of feedback. I know we've talked a little bit about that, what we've been getting in terms of customer feedback. What all else are you hearing back from others, too, that is good about the product? We've touched on some things already, but I just wanted to ask you about any other thoughts that you personally have about what you're proud of, as well as what kinds of things you're hearing from others as well.
I guess I'm most proud of how successful it's been and how much coverage and how much feedback we get daily from other groups and our partners. And I guess I didn't really expect that it would be as successful and as usable as it was. And I'm also proud that it made the release schedule. But
yeah, I think I read one article where it was one of the top 10 stories of IBM for 2008, and that sort of blew me away because we feel like we're just in this little corner and, you know, here's this big behemoth IBM, and we would make one of the top 10 stories was really exciting. And I think one piece of feedback that really got me excited was that one customer wrote in and said, this is our reason for upgrading. And, you know, Notes is big. And that a customer would actually consider upgrading their environment so that they could get this iPhone was really compelling.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to drive sales and drive decisions that way, I was beyond what I was thinking we were doing.
It's also, you know, it's great. I love hearing the feedback, and getting, you know, what can make it better is always a great thing too.
All our colleagues are really jealous.
I can imagine.
That we get to play on the iPhone, and we we trade off. We don't have each an iPhone, but we sort of can trade off and have learned to use the device. And
yeah, the thought of not being on this project, I think, is haunting. I can't imagine not getting to continue with this in the future.
Now, I connect a fair bit, as you may know, through Twitter and through our external IBM.com/design website, and the Twitter account is IBM Design. And I get a lot of feedback, a lot of interest. I mentioned that we would be doing this interview today, and there's a lot of interest in people wanting to listen to this, because I think it's also the case that, as you were saying, Margot, that, you know, this isn't necessarily something that people expect from IBM. You know, as you said earlier too, Carrie, that, you know, the new design of Lotus Notes itself, you know, surprises a lot of people, that, you know, it's been around for a long time. And I think, as Mary Beth Raven mentioned on one of our previous podcasts, you know, had kind of an unusual user interface for a number of years. And now it has a very interesting, very, very engaging, very slick, very professional, very polished user interface. And I think the various other platforms here, the web one with iNotes, and then the one that we've been talking about most today, is again an exemplary, you know, instance of, I think, design that a lot of people don't expect from what they may have seen many years ago from IBM. And I think as a result, there is significant interest in these kinds of products. Now, in terms of getting this themselves, you'd mentioned, Margot, that, you know, people are really interested in getting this, and they're wanting to sort of upgrade their server in order to get this capability. I totally understand that, because that's certainly what I would like to do as well. What is required? Like, if somebody listening to this is saying, you know, hey, I want this, and my company already uses Notes, or, you know, my company doesn't, I want to try to get them to use Notes because I think this sounds really cool. What do they need to have in order to actually use, you know, this product we've been talking about today?
Well, as we said, it's a browser interface, so you need the URL access. You need to be running a Domino 8.02 server, and that was the first release that we were supported on. We subsequently have come out on 8.5 Domino with a desktop support, and then to be released this year is an 8.5.1 release, and that release will really... We have a lot of new features going in where you can manage your inbox, you can delete multiple items, you can mark things unread multiple times, you can accept and decline calendar invitations. There's a name picker so that you don't have to remember all your addresses, and that's coming out this year. But if you wanted just to start with it, you need an 8.2 Domino server, and again, it's URL access.
So you just need to have that, and then you have the capability of being able to get direct access to this iPhone, access to your notes, mail, and contacts, and calendar, and the like as well. I think it sounds great. Now, is there anything else that I may not have asked about, because I've been asking all the questions, that you'd like to just mention before we finish up, any of you?
Stay tuned to the next release.
Yeah, we look forward. If we can't wait for you guys to start using it, and the more feedback we get, the better, and we can continue on making improvements and making it the best product that it can be.
Yeah, hearing feedback definitely makes our job a lot easier.
Great
or
stuff.
Or harder. Yeah. Which way you look at it.
That's right. But it's key that you are, in fact, doing significant design work, but very importantly also engaging directly in, you know, user feedback. We've seen some companies that have chosen one or the other, actually. But I think that we are in these projects, and yours is another of an instance of the IBM projects that we've been reviewing in this overall podcast series that reinforce, again, excellence in design, excellence in visual design, interaction design, user research, user evaluation work, and all wrapped around an agile development process and using things like Persona and the like as well. So, you know, really good work. My congratulations to all of you and the rest of the team for excellent work in, you know, putting this overall project together and delivering the level of design excellence that you have. And if anybody that's listening to this wants to know more about this, we've mentioned before, but there is a story about this particular project on our IBM.com/design site in the design gallery. You can read about various aspects of the development of the project, some additional quotes from the people that we've had on the session today. And also there's a demo that you can play as well and see an example of this and see how it actually works and how the design, you know, comes together. So encourage you to go check that out as well. So I want to thank Margot for your participation in this session. Thanks, Margot.
Thanks, Carl. It's been great.
And Carrie, thank you for both your work, your design work on the project, as well as your contributions to this interview session.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Michelle, for the excellent usability work you've been doing on the project as well, and your contribution to today's session as well.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for this opportunity, and thanks for letting us reach out to potentially more customers.
Thanks so much. All right, well, that's the end of this particular installment of the UX Design Cast podcast series, and we encourage you to tune into other podcast episodes where we do panel discussions of news that are related to to design that have happened in the previous month. We also have a panel session that talks about design topics in a tutorial fashion, and also occasionally I interview design leaders at other companies, and we've got some of those coming up soon as well, and so stay tuned. That's it for this particular installment. Talk to you all next time, and bye for now.